This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin. With me this week are two fantastic people, Brian Murray.
Hello.
And Tia Vasiliou.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining me this week. This is a fantastic week. It's not a million degrees outside as far as I can tell, and comic books have been pretty great. So let me ask you the question that I ask every single week. How have you been? And how have comic books been? I'll kick it right over to Tia.
Comics have been okay. This was sort of a slow week for me. I read Moon Girl and Devil Dino number 10, which I had kind of forgotten about for a while. I'd liked the first few issues. It was really cute and sweet. And I feel like when people talk about the cute heroines, the sort of more all ages Marvel books, they talk about Ms. Marvel and Squirrel Girl. I feel like I don't always hear Moon Girl included in there, and she really needs to be. And in fact, this issue was a Moon Girl, Ms. Marvel sort of mashup that was really cute. I enjoyed it.
Before you move on to the next book, I thought that this book was canceled because I've heard nothing about it outside of when it came out.
I know,
like,
right?
The fact that it's at number 10 is actually very surprising. And like, I'm super happy that it's still coming out, but I wasn't reading it, and I hadn't heard anything about it, so I just assumed that it had been canceled. So I'm just glad to see that it's still going.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten about it, and so I'm glad that I picked it back up, and I'm hopefully putting it back on your radar if this was a book you had been interested in, or if you are at all inclined to read a more kind of fun, upbeat, all-ages Marvel. I mean, actually, I don't know. It's got some serious themes. Like, it's not entirely like cutesy and frivolous. It's a really quality book that has, like, you know, it makes a significant contribution, I think, to like the wider Marvel universe goings on. Definitely don't overlook Moon Girl and Devil Dino.
I don't know. Cool. Comic books aren't supposed to be fun. If there's one thing I've learned as a longtime Marvel comics reader, I'm just supposed to be mad at my comic books.
Right. Right.
Well, maybe you're not reading the right ones. Like, maybe you should start reading Moon Girl and Devil Dino.
I think it's Mike's influence.
Yeah, it's all me. Yeah. I'm just incredibly negative.
It's true. On the topic of negativity, I hate to say negative things about comics. I try to avoid that. But I'm really, really disappointed, and I have to share my disappointment. So, Patsy Walker, aka Hellcat, number 9. Now, Patsy Walker's ex is, I don't know if everyone knows this, among other dudes, Damon Hellstrom, who I really enjoy, particularly his bee-pentacled, bare, muscular chest that, to me...
Isn't this guy Son of Satan? Isn't
yes.
that, like, his character? Okay,
yes.
I just want to make sure.
I mean, this is everything that I want in a character, okay? And
abs.
I mean, he's, like, really sarcastic. Abs, pentagrams, and They draw him with a shirt on in this book. What the hell? What the actual hell?
I thought this was going to be like a legitimate criticism of like the storytelling.
Excuse me. How am I supposed to believe that these creators truly understand this character and where he's coming from as a human or as a whatever he is, a son of Satan?
Oh my goodness.
If he's wearing a shirt.
You Maybe know? It's not really him. Maybe it's
I have a huge
twist.
Problem with this. May ooh.
See, this is like Supernatural. If the guys didn't take off their shirts every once in a while, you'd be like, I don't know if that's Sam and Dean.
There's like literally no other reason to watch that show at this point.
Right, right.
So yeah. So that was a super bummer. I'm going to move on though to something that I really enjoyed that I would like to talk about, which is a book by Derf Backderf called My Friend Dahmer. Have you guys read this?
No.
I heard of it. This is about Jeffrey Dahmer, isn't it?
So, yes. So, the creator of this book was friends with Jeffrey Dahmer when they were teenagers.
Oh, man.
Okay, you've got me. You've hooked me.
It is. And so, okay. You know, this book is not about Jeffrey Dahmer, the serial killer. This book is about how the adults in their lives when they were adolescents failed Jeffrey Dahmer and did not step up to prevent the tragedy. And this book, Backdraft is very clear that he does not feel sympathy for Dahmer as a figure, that he's a tragic figure up to the point that he murders people, right? But and the author of this book, the creator, I should say, he writes and draws it. He doesn't really have contact with Jeffrey Dahmer after high school, so he doesn't really comment much on the events that happened later, you know, with the killing. It's more just about, like, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer had a really troubled childhood, a really troubled home life. He had a lot of problems. He had a lot of really serious you know, mental issues that he was struggling with. He was a raging alcoholic from a very young age.
Really?
And he acted out in very strange and disturbing ways from a very young age. And his parents were kind of wrapped up in their own tragedy of their marriage and their situation. And just nobody noticed that this kid would be like completely drunk at 8 o'clock in the morning at high school, or, you know, he would go around and act like he had cerebral palsy, and people just kind of laughed it off. And actually, in the book, when you know, later on, when the creator is an adult, and his wife calls him and says, "Oh my God, there's this horrific serial killer that they just caught, and you went to high school with him," Dahmer was not even his first guess.
Which, no way.
To me, is such an indictment of small towns in the 70s, and just like the kind of secrecy around family problems or mental health problems that kept people from asking for help, or that kept people from intervening if they noticed that someone needed help. And they're actually filming a movie of My Friend Dahmer right now. Might want to check it out, because it's probably going to be more in the media in the coming, you know, year or so. And I really encourage you guys to check out the book, because Backdurf is just such an incredible visual storyteller. Like, he is, you will learn so much about how to tell a story by reading this book. His style is really kind of, I would describe it as geometric and economical. He isn't super painterly like a lot of the artists I tend to be drawn towards. But what he's really good at is framing these story beats and transitioning from one story beat to the next. That makes his pacing, it pulls you through the story, and all you have to do is just go along. There was never a moment when I felt really taken out of the story, even at moments of like profound, disturbing upset where there's so much tension, even though this is about Jeffrey Dahmer, there's no violence on screen. There's not even swearing. Like, it's not a gory book, but the tension that Backdurf builds with his pacing and the way that he frames shots, he's so good. You guys definitely should read this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sold. You sold me. This is, wow.
So
okay.
Good. It's so good.
I'm just going to talk about superhero comics today. So, Brian, how's your week been? What have you been reading, my friend? I don't know how to top that, Tia. You just destroyed all of this. What did you read this week?
I'm sorry.
Well, I've been listening to a podcast called My Favorite Murderer, or My Favorite Murder, maybe.
Okay.
Neither here nor there in comic books, but as long as we're talking about serial killers, I right. just thought I'd mention that. No, comics, I don't know. Like Tia said, this has been a slow week in the comic book world for me. So I've been reading a lot of older stuff that I didn't read when it was coming out because I didn't have money for it. I actually got a Marvel Unlimited subscription for the sole purpose of reading last summer's Secret Wars, just because I was reading it, and I'd bring it home, and Mike would go, "Hey, what are you doing reading Secret Wars, stupid?" And then,
I never did that.
Mike.
I'm a jerk about comic books. Have you figured this out yet?
And then Mike, of course, started reading Secret Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I'm actually glad that I waited and did it this way, because I would have been very dissatisfied if I had spent that much money on this event. It's not that it was bad. It just, I don't think it's worth $4 or $5 issues. You know?
Right, right.
Wow, when you put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I saw that the hardcover was coming out, and I was like, $50 for a comic book?
What?
That's absurd. Yeah. And then I looked at the prices of the individual issues, and I was like, well, no, if you take 9 times 5, you're already almost to $50. And then you've got all the back content, the sketches and everything like that. So,
man, I have no concept of this, and it always blows my mind when I see how much these things cost.
Yeah, I mean, we've done a little bit of discussion on this about Marvel trades and the ridiculous pricing of that, but like Secret Wars and like the Hawkeye Omnibus, like some of those, the pricing on those are simply just because they know people want to buy them, so they're going to jack up the price. It's not about giving you a good deal or making sure that you can get the comics in your hands. It's just about selling you something and them making money, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, and from a business standpoint, great job, Marvel.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I suppose people who buy these hardcovers want them as a display book, not just a reading book. So
yeah, yeah,
they're probably more inclined to do it. Yeah.
I also read the original Civil War. I'm actually not done with it. I started reading it at work on my lunch break. But Marvel Unlimited does have a cool feature where you can read an event like this, and it'll give you a list of all the books in that event in order. So I know to read, like, Spider-Man 592, then 593, then She-Hulk number 8, then Civil War number 1. Like,
oh, that's really cool.
It really just floors me that more places don't have that kind of resource because everyone needs it.
Yeah. Yeah, because I would have had no idea how to find any of this crap without them just handing it to me. I will say, you know, mad props to our Comixology folks that the Marvel Unlimited version of Guided View sucks. It's awful. So, good on you guys. Thanks for making a cool product. I read Wicked and Divine number 22, which I think came out like last week or something.
Yes.
Man, yeah.
talk about symmetry, huh?
Like, yeah.
That felt good. It warmed the cockles of my heart to see that finally happen.
I feel like Gillen was kind of shaming people for it, for liking that in the writer notes. It was sort of like, this was a bad thing that happened. Everyone's sitting there going, yes, finally.
Yeah.
No spoilers, though. No spoilers, though.
You know, when bad things happen to bad people, I'm usually... I have a small vindictive glee about it.
Right. Right.
I suppose I do feel like it does say a lot about Persephone, and even if doing a bad thing to a bad person is justifiable in some way, it still is like a shitty thing to do that you have to, in terms of like you have to live with having done it. Maybe that is going to be a hard thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think that Persephone has been altogether a good or nice person the entire series, though. So.
It's true. She literally has one goal in mind, and she has since the beginning, and she's pursued it pretty ruthlessly.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what makes her such a compelling character, is that she's not a good person. She's just a normal person.
Yeah. I believe her sexuality has been described as things that are bad for her.
Yes, I've seen that post as well.
Yeah. One of my favorite like panels in all of Wicdiv is her face when Ball comes and picks her up from the bus, and he asks like where he should take her, and she gets that look on her face like back to your place, and it's just like, oh, Laura, you're like living the fangirl dream right now,
right?
Do it for all of us.
I like her face more when it's just that shot from above of her and Baphomet. Baphomet just, well, this was a mistake.
He looks like his mind was blown into a million pieces.
Yeah, no, he just has that look on his face of like, what the hell just happened to me? which is good. You know, I think that he as a character needs stuff like that more often.
Where
he's completely taken by surprise and knocked off his game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
On the topic of facial expressions and bringing it back to 22, Cassandra's face after the thing. Yeah. And everyone just and everyone's just like, oh my god, and Cassandra's just like, fuck.
Yeah. Which is Cassandra through the entire series, really.
It's true. I love her so much.
Everybody's running around doing their dumb bullshit, and she's just watching from the sidelines.
You know, there's a line where in one of the recent issues where she says she wouldn't trust half of them to make toast, and I wonder which half she would trust to make toast.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be, like, just Minerva.
I mean, yeah.
Just by virtue of not having been around long enough to do anything too terrible.
Yeah, she's young enough that she can't be that bad yet.
She did kill Carrie.
I don't remember that. So,
this has been the Wicked and Divine special fan club meeting.
Look.
We have to break.
Hey, you knew who you were bringing on this show.
This is true. This is true.
I can't be held responsible for anything that I say after a Wicked is brought up, okay?
We will have to do another very special Wicked and Divine minisode just so that we can get more of this out. I assure you, that'll be something we'll try to do.
We'll do just periodic Wicked and Divine episodes.
Yeah.
Me, Xander, and Tia. We'll just get on here and just go, did you see this? I know, right?
Trying to talk around the spoilers.
Oh my goodness. I would love to listen to that, if only because I am an avid reader of this book as well.
It would sound like a Mad Lib.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? What did you read this week?
Oh, yeah. So this week, I had a pretty decent sized pull, but I didn't get around to a lot of the comics. I read a bunch on Wednesday, and then they just kind of drifted away. I did read Invincible 130, which was my pick for last week, and the more I read of this book now, the more excited I get towards the end, or as it's coming closer to an end, so we've got another year left.
Oh, geez. I thought it was ending, like, next month or something.
No. It's ending at issue 144, so we've got at least another 13 issues left.
Gross of comic books.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. I think that now that Kirkman has announced that, it's started to put a lot of gears in motion to say, oh, he's actually ramping up to this ending rather than just continuing on the Invincible train, which he's been kind of doing for the last 20 or so issues. Not in like a bad way, but it's like now we have like a goal in mind, so it's everything feels more meaningful. I also read Renato Jones, The 1% number 4. I don't know who this book is for. I don't know if this book's for me. Like, I think this book is for me when I was 20, where I was very much like, fuck you, fuck everything, fuck the man, blah, blah, blah.
The angry and punk rock phase.
Yeah, like, that's what this book feels like. And it's cool. It's got, like, a very, very much like a, feels like Dark Knight, Punisher, like, pretty much anything that Frank Miller has done about revenge. It feels like that, but has no superheroics in it, really. It does have a man in a mask, but it's a man in a mask in the same way that Zorro is the man in a mask. I'm still going to keep reading it because I do like Cary Kyle Andrews' work, but boy, is this book extreme. It's very, 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 very extreme. I read Bakuman Volume 4 because I'm on a manga kick, and I'm just going to leave it at that. And I started to read Batman City of Owls, which is the Scott Snyder run Volume 2. I only got about halfway through that, so I'm hopefully going to finish that tonight. And, man, that book is really interesting. The one thing I will say is that in the middle of one of the issues of, like, the big call to arms issue, if anyone who reads that, I'm sure Nick and Paul are going to be like, Mike, what are you talking about? There's a moment in the actual Batman book where they switch from Greg Capullo over to Raphael Albuquerque, and the switch was so jarring that I, like, had to stop reading and go back and reread the section that Albuquerque did because the inking was so wildly different that I was just thrown for what was actually happening. I wasn't really a big fan of the way that Albuquerque drew Damian or Nightwing or pretty much anyone, which is kind of a bummer because I got really used to Capullo's art. But overall, I'm really liking this Batman book, and I should have been reading this, you know, like a year ago. But finally, the thing that I was really excited about this week and I read as soon as I got it on Wednesday was the Hellblazer number 1, which is the new Constantine series. It has Mortat and Simon Oliver on the book, as they'd had in the Rebirth issue, so that was really kind of a pleasant surprise. I wasn't tracking what was happening in this book as far as creators go, so to see these two back on the book and telling the main story was, like, really, really cool. And it was a nice enough number one that you didn't really need to read the Rebirth issue in order to get what was happening. But if you did, it was kind of like you had a little bit of special insider things to some snide comments that John made, which is no different than the snide comments he would make anyways about like some magical mystery thing that had happened in his past. But if you'd read that Rebirth one-shot, you knew the magical mystery thing that had happened in his past. So that was cool. And I also really just love any interaction that John Constantine has with Swamp Thing. It's, I don't know what it is. Those two have like the best worst chemistry in these books because they're constantly just jabbing at each other, and it's hilarious.
Have you seen anything about the Justice League Dark animated movie that's coming out this fall?
I heard about it. I didn't know anything else other than that it was coming out.
I saw a trailer on YouTube the other day, and it looks like it's all going to be about these like dark and gritty magical types from the DC universe.
Right, is it going to be, do you know if it's going to be following like the Justice League Dark series that they did during the New 52, or?
I don't know. Okay. I just know that Constantine's going to be in it. I think Zatanna is like one of the big feature characters.
Oh, cool.
Pretty sure maybe I saw I'll... Swamp Thing in the background somewhere. So.
And at the end of the day, I can kind of bank on the fact that DC does their animated movies right, so that's probably going to be a really good movie. Somehow, despite all the other cinematic work that they're doing, DC's animated movies tend to always be good.
Yeah.
So that's exciting.
They're always well made. I don't know. I watched The Killing Joke like an idiot. So
I
can say they're not always good, but that's not their fault. That's the source material's fault.
That's like the exception, I think, to everything else. Because like the Doomsday movie that they did, the Mask of the Phantasm, like all of those have been fantastic.
They do a really good job adapting stories, even when the story they're adapting is bad.
I don't know. Right. I feel like with Killing Joke, they were like, how can we polish this turd? How about we polish it with this other turd?
Ugh. Yeah, they just put two turds together, and then they made a movie.
Yeah, I think I saw that movie.
Anyways, you know, comic books come out on August 31st this week, which is Wednesday, as per usual. So, you know, what are you two excited for this upcoming week?
I wouldn't say I'm excited so much as, like, devastated that The Last Mercury Heat is coming out. Why did no one read this book with me? What's wrong with you people?
Is it ended? Or is it getting ended? Or is it, like, coming to a natural conclusion?
It's ending. It's the end of a story arc, and... I'm really bummed. I feel like no one read this book, and I don't understand why, because it's like, do you love badass chicks and sci-fi action and gory, like, guts being sprayed everywhere? Yes, everyone loves that. It's hilarious. With witty dialogue and, like, come on.
See, I think the problem with this book is that it's being published by Avatar, and I feel like the covers would have thrown me, I never saw them at, like, Midtown or any other comic shop, because Avatar gets like, pushed to the side or
put
behind things.
The covers are horrible.
See, that's the thing. Like, if you're trying to rope people in and say, this is a witty book that's really clever and does all these good things, and then you have a cover that's, like, cheesecake, and it... I don't know. Like, how do you convey that in a cover?
This book was marketed horribly, and Avatar's covers like did it no justice. Every single cover was like a tits and ass plus gratuitous violence cover. So the kind of people who would have really loved the heroine and like really gotten a kick out of the like dialogue and the storylines wouldn't have given it really a second glance if they only were just seeing it on the shelf and like judging it by its cover.
Yeah,
well, one of those kinds of books I usually don't pick up just because, like, even if the story's really good, I don't want to be the guy checking that book out at the counter.
Right.
It's the same reason I didn't read Vampirella for the longest time.
That's why because, you hide your shame by buying digital, Brian.
That's right.
Yeah, I guess. I think if I put any more shame on my computer, it might combust, though.
You can read Vampirella now, though, because, like, Kate Leth and she has pants on or shorts at least. Like, yeah.
I was very excited about that, and then I never saw it in the store, so I couldn't buy it. Like, I looked for it, too. I just never saw the issues.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
You have to tell them what you want.
It goes back to, you have to tell your comic shop what to
you
pull
do.
For.
Communication
you really do.
Is always important.
Anyway, right. Go read Mercury Heat, because now you can read it from start to finish, and then you can feel bad and ashamed of yourselves for not buying the book when it was ongoing, and maybe we could have had it longer.
Okay, Feel shame. Brian, what are you excited about this upcoming week?
I'm super pumped about Han Solo number 3. It's Marjorie Liu is writing, Mark Brooks on art. And this is the Han Solo story that I've always wanted.
Yes, I'm right there with you. And Tia, this is all your fault for me buying this book, by the way.
I accept.
Okay.
It's just
continue,
like
Brian.
Han Solo, who's when he's still kind of like a badass smuggler getting into a spaceship race. Like, that's what I want. I don't want, yeah, like General Solo messing around with Ewoks. I want,
right,
like, I want the scruffy nerf herder back is what I want.
I mean, I think that the thing is that Han Solo also doesn't want General Solo messing with Ewoks.
Yeah, exactly.
Han Solo just wants to be a scruffy nerf herder.
What I think is really good about this series so far is how underrated Han Solo is. Like, he's very much a New Hope Han Solo, where, like, no one knows who he is, and he's super overconfident, and he gets, yeah, in people's faces, and everyone's like, you don't even know what you're doing here, and he's like, I'm the best that there is. It's like, it's like, shut up, Han. You're going to get yourself killed, and it's hilarious.
I kind of picture it as Han Solo as imagined by Andy Dwyer.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
I don't know, I'm excited to find out more about the, like, 9 foot tall blue alien lady who's been,
yeah,
like, around. Like, I want to know her deal real bad.
Yeah, this book is doing a fantastic job of expanding the universe in a way that feels really natural. Like, they put our main character that we all know and love in a situation where we don't know anyone. Yeah. And because of that, we get these little micro backstories and little bits and pieces of information about how the universe works outside of the regular Star Wars story. And this makes me think, oh my goodness, why haven't I been reading all these extended universe stories for the longest time? Because I feel like that's what a lot of them are.
Yeah, man.
I don't know.
I haven't been reading either the ongoings, but I think I've read every Star Wars miniseries that's come out.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying. I'm reading Poe Dameron. That's an ongoing.
And that book is fantastic, so that's okay.
But yeah, like, Princess Leia was great, Chewbacca was great, Anakin and Obi-Wan was really good.
Did you read the Lando
really
book?
Good.
Yeah. Oh, Lando was great.
I feel like we need a BB-8 book, or at least just a BB-8, like, mini.
Well,
three-issue BB-8 mini.
They do BB-8 mini stories in the back of each Poe Dameron issue.
I know, that's why I want, like, I want him to have his own him, her. I don't know. I'm not trying to gender BB-8 here.
Right.
BB-8 needs their own book.
I agree. There was a panel in the most recent issue of Poe Dameron where he's like, what are you going to do? Go be a detective on your own? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Yes,
oh, my God.
Is. Please, God, yes. It was the best part of the whole, like, I burst out laughing. I think I posted that photo on Twitter, too. So it was, like, just absolutely perfect. I think Charles Soule is writing that book. He's doing a great job. I love it. But Han Solo is really good, too. Marjorie Luke totally captured Han Solo's voice. And
yeah.
Tia was like, this is peak Han Solo. I was like, okay, mm-hmm, try me. And then I got hooked.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. It's everything I want from Han Solo.
Yeah. Well, for me this week, seeing that I just recently reread all of Lazarus 1 through 23, Lazarus 24 is coming out this week, so I am totally 100% up to date and certain of what's happening in the story, so I'm really excited to see the continuation of what's happening in Lazarus, and I don't really want to talk about it any further than that, because this book is one of those books where if you give away any small detail, like, it spoils a whole, everything that happened before, like, even all the way back to issue 1, so...
I
Lazarus
really need to
24.
Catch up with that book. Yeah, I read the first arc and I loved it.
Like, I honestly wish that this book would stop coming out serialized and come out in story arcs, like, as in independent novels, because it feels like each story arc is, like, its own contained, like, novella, and I almost just want that from this book. So part of me is thinking I might just sit on the rest of this story arc and then reread the entire story arc in one go, because reading the book from 1 to 23, it was 100% intrigue, nonstop. I really could not put it down. I had to force myself to go to bed some nights to keep reading this, to stop reading this book. It's so good. It's so, so well crafted. Greg Rucka, man, that guy knows what he's doing. He's easily one of the best, most talented comic book writers out there. And this book is testament to that, I think.
So I'll admit, I have no idea what this book is.
Okay.
I've never read anything or heard about it, or like, I know who Lazarus was, the OG Lazarus.
Okay. So here, let me give you a brief synopsis that'll bring you up to speed.
Elevator
number one.
To me.
Yeah, so the world in the year 20XX has fallen into chaos, where there are 15 or 16 families that control the entire globe, and we are following one specific family that has what they call a Lazarus, which is a person in their family that cannot die. And so they are used as like a soldier. In our case, this character is in charge of the like army of this family. They control the western half of the United States, everything west of the Mississippi.
Wow.
And they have three classes of humans that live in their world or in their territory, which is the family, which is like the direct relations, the father and his children and their Lazarus. And then there is the serf level, which are like people that are do regular jobs, work for the family, their families are taken care of because they serve a purpose to the family. And then everyone else who doesn't have a job, who lives out on their own, is called waste. And essentially, yeah, it's a crazy dystopian future. And then intrigue happens when, you know, two families go to war or someone, like there's also like a side story that follows somebody that was once a waste and they get elevated to become a serf, and they, you know, serve a purpose for the family. Basically trying to establish all the things that are happening in this world. And we follow a little bit of other families, but for the most part, it's all about this one family and their Lazarus, their main character forever. And she is fantastic. And the art in this book by Michael Lark is beautiful. Oh man, this is a really good story.
Something that I was picking up on when I was reading it was that, like, the Lazarus is sort of technically part of the family, but there's kind of more nuance to that than some people realize. And it,
yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to talk around it per your no spoiler edict here.
Yeah.
So, they're the idea of this case system, cast system. How do you say that? Cast. There's a lot of nuance to it, and it a lot of the levels of story kind of revolve around it.
Yeah, and so, you know, you think about this Lazarus, like most families have a Lazarus, so they have a member of their family that cannot die, or when they die, they're brought back to life in some way. In one case, that one guy's a cyborg. In our case, forever, just she dies and she comes back to life. How that happens is a total mystery until you read more of the story. But these people are seen as weapons of the family. Like, they're not completely accepted. And so there are a few moments throughout the story where you get multiple Lazari interacting with each other.
Lazari?
That's what they call them. They call them Lazari. You see them interacting with each other, and they're just some really beautiful moments about how they are the outcasts of the family, even though they are as important, if not more important, than some of the family members themselves. It's a really cool, action-packed story with really, 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 really strong character development. I think, like, Forever's character development between the first 18 issues is astounding. Like, you don't see that type of evolution and growth for a character in a lot of books, and I think Greg Rucka is just nailing this on the head. Like, this is going to be one of his greatest books ever, as far as I'm concerned.
Sweet.
So if you're not reading Lazarus, get down, fix that.
Yeah, no, you good pitch.
Yeah. I mean, and I believe it's on Comixology Unlimited. I think, like, the first volume is, so if you have that, that's a good way to start. But, you know, we'll plug all the other subscription services in another episode, I promise.
So a little while ago, I picked up Phonogram for the probably 157,000th time to read, just because, I don't know, it's almost like a habit or a reflex at certain points or in certain moods, I guess. And mm-hmm. I have a, a small but steady collection of backlist books that I just read and reread to pieces. And I was wondering if other people do this.
You know, that's something that I, up until very recently, was just like vehemently against. I was like, I've read it once. I know the story. That's it. And then as, you know, I've gotten older, I've realized, oh shit, I don't have as good a memory as I thought I did. That book that I read 10 years ago, actually, I don't remember all of the intricate details like I told myself that I would remember. So like case in point, Lazarus I reread. But otherwise, I actually don't normally reread books. So I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot to say about that, unfortunately.
Fine. So I'm sure it'll come
so dead topic. That's the end. Bye. Thanks for listening. This has been no. Sorry.
Well, I feel like you don't reread books to remind yourself what happened. You reread books because you pick up new things. Like you bring new things to the reading.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know, you go back with a new mindset and
yeah.
You'll interpret the events of the book in a different way than you did the first time.
Yeah. I mean, I can say that I've done that with prose books, like the handful of prose books that I've reread over the years. Like Brave New World, I've probably read at least 100 times. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but I've read that book a lot. And I feel like every time...
Like Lazarus so much, though.
Yeah. I mean, I've read that book so many times that like every time I read it, I catch a little bit of a detail. But I don't know. I've never really done that too much with comics. Like, what do you guys get out of rereading comics again?
One of the things that, for me, it's always just... it's always if I liked the way the book was written, I'm much more likely to go back and reread it.
Mm-hmm.
And the example I always go back to there are the Buffy the Vampire Slayer comics, which
okay.
my fiance has the first like I don't know 11 or 12 trade paperbacks that they put out.
Oh goodness!
Of, like season 9 and season 10, or season 8 and season 9, not 9.
Yeah,
and 10.
Yeah.
But I can go back and reread those all the time just because the dialogue is funny. It doesn't matter that I know what's going to happen because I wasn't really reading those books for the events themselves anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always fun to go back and reread like the way characters interact with each other and things like that.
Yeah, I would say that characters are the main draw for me when it comes to rereading older books. I am drawn more in general to character-driven stories as opposed mm-hmm. to like action-driven stories. But if I really connect with a character, I'll want to visit them once in a while. And I feel like depending on where I am in my life or in my headspace, I interact with them as a character in different ways than I did before. And it pulls out different threads that maybe I wasn't sensitive to before or paying attention to before.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I can see that in the handful of movies that I tend to rewatch because I am I'm a crazy person like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Like that movie is by far one of the movies that I've watched the most in my entire life, and I feel like every time like I start to relate more and more with like the parents of the story, and I'm just like, oh my god, these kids are just awful. Why would they do this? But I remember watching that book or watching that movie as a kid, and I was like, why isn't Veruca Salt getting her way? Come on, mom and dad. But I mean, I don't think it's necessarily like I resonated with the character so much. It's just like this is the movie that's supposed to be about these people. They're the main characters, so why aren't they getting their way in some things?
Of course they do. I was just talking to Kate about this last night. My fiance Kate, not show Kate. We were driving over to John's house, and I put on the Rent soundtrack, and I was just talking about how, like, one of the signs of adulthood is when you start to really empathize with Benny, the character whose motivation is to get these damn hippies to pay their rent. That's like the big opening song. It's about how they're not going to pay rent. And I'm like, well, you entitled little fucks. I'm like, come on. We all got to pay rent. It sucks, but that's life.
Like, right, right. Brian, you haven't lived in New York. It's really fucking bad here. No.
Yeah, that's on purpose, Mike.
Yeah, I know. But with comics, it seems like, I mean, I guess I could see like rereading something to like reconnect with the character, but maybe I just don't know if I've had that level of connection with a book like that where I'm like, I empathize with the character so much that I just want to reread that story. Like, even when I reread Scott Pilgrim earlier this year, all I could think of is, like, all the emotions that I had felt when I originally read it. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. This is so clever. It's so funny. And rereading it going, like, this actually isn't as great as I thought it was. And maybe that's kind of the point here. Like, when you reread something, you reevaluate what you originally thought about it. And either it adds or detracts from it.
Yeah, I think that you definitely run that risk, which is always a bummer. It feels like losing a friend sometimes.
Yeah.
Or sometimes realizing what a jerk your friend actually was.
Yeah.
right.
Or what a jerk you used to be for thinking they were awesome.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. God. Ugh.
I mean, I think specifically in the case of Scott Pilgrim, I mean, that book was probably probably like a slap in the face for myself, saying, why did I think this way about certain topics? Why did I think that, you know, this was so great when it's really just someone being a piece of shit to another person? And I'm not trying to point out any specific character interaction in general on purpose, because I think that that book is just full of that. And my opinions have definitely shifted 180 from where I originally stood on the book and some of the things that happened throughout it. So, while also recognizing like why I thought they were originally fun and still holding on to that little piece of nostalgia, but saying like, I'm a different person now and this isn't necessarily the same book that I thought it was.
I mean, for me, there's definitely an element of nostalgia in terms of like, if I read a book where I felt really immersed in a rich world, I will want to visit it again. Like, especially if the world is a very vast one. The Hellboy and the BPRD books, like, you could reread those forever and ever. You know, there's so much there. They're so complex and vast. So you could almost reread books that you kind of had forgotten about. If like Mike, you don't necessarily feel like you want to revisit things for plot details and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
Like, there's just so much there that you couldn't have possibly absorbed it the first time.
Yeah, and I think that's, for me, that's what rereading is. I am of the mindset that, you know, you've read a story once, and even when I go back to reread some things, I'm kind of like, I already know what's happening, and I know what's going to happen, how this is going to play out, how these two character interactions are going to change over the course of this story. And so I this is why I think I don't get a lot of value out of rereading books like that, because for me it is all about the plot. Like, and this might just be some weird thing where I don't empathize with the characters that are, you know, that I'm reading, but it really does come down to like, just I want to read new story, I want to read things that I haven't read before, so it's all about discovery for me, not necessarily about re-experiencing those types of things, I guess. I don't know, when in the case of like Willy Wonka, it's 100% nostalgia, and in the case of Brave New World, it's all about just like reminding myself of like the weird, crazy types of stories that can be written. Like, that book right there was my first entry into dystopian future books, and like, I will always like cherish that moment of saying, holy shit, this is crazy. Could the world become like this, and am I seeing these types of things in our world already? But that's like a different thing, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think that's an important thing to touch on, though, is that a big part of the reason people go back to revisit anything is for that. It's almost like a kind of sense memory where you read this and you experience the same kinds of things you experienced the first time you read it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll frequently go back and reread Jurassic Park. Gotcha. I'll go back and reread that just because I was, you know, a sixth grader, I think, experiencing like grown-up literature for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was way too young to be reading that book, by the way. way too many bloody disembowelments for a sixth grader to be reading.
You know who needs to adapt the Jurassic Park world into comics? Natasha Alterici.
Yes, please.
Have you seen her dinosaur book?
No.
It's amazing. Yeah, she would be great.
She did that series Heathen that I was, you know, raving about for a short while when it was still coming out. I think there's another arc coming because they just finished the Kickstarter a little while ago. Meanwhile, she was also doing a Patreon she would give little mini dinosaur comics, and her art on dinosaurs is fantastic.
Yeah, if we could get a version that sticks close to the actual book, then I would be all about that.
Or even just expand it, like what happens in between the books, and do kind of the expanded universe through comics, but keep it in the bounds of the canon that the books talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, because like one of the last books that I read was, I just read one issue that Ben Perry had bought, and it was about this woman who like gets tossed off a boat and washes up on Isla Nublar, and then is like riding dinosaurs, or somebody's there who rides dinosaurs.
What? Natasha would draw awesome people riding dinosaurs. This needs to happen.
But I think what Brian's getting at is that's a bit out of the, like,
that's a super cool story, but it's not a Jurassic Park story.
Yeah. It but is if you want it to be,
people riding
though.
Dinosaurs.
Get her to write Dinotopia comics, then.
Oh my god.
Wait, what's Dinotopia?
The new topic of this podcast is things we want Natasha Alterici to make.
That's fine. Continue. What is Dinotopia?
So it's this this island world that is like cut off from the entire world by like coral reefs and clouds of smoke and whatnot. It's basically impossible to find unless you find it by accident. And it's a place where dinosaurs continued to evolve intelligence-wise, but their bodies didn't change at all. So they're still like sauropods and theropods and everything, but they just have human level intelligence.
And it's I see.
Although I think that when they made Dinotopia, they believed that there were certain kinds of dinosaurs that now we know were just like some bones from a bunch of different dinosaurs that got mixed together.
Oh yeah.
So they would have to update that.
For sure. But it's, I don't know, it was a really cool series for me when I was a kid growing up. I was always like riding my bike to the library to find new ones and stuff.
Hmm. So this is how you get something like Professor Dinosaur, which is like a dinosaur in like a lab coat with glasses. I could get behind this.
Say no more.
This episode took the weirdest turn.
It's fine. This episode is now all about dinosaurs.
Yes, good. Moon Girl and Devil Dino, read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But so when it comes to rereading these books, do you find yourselves, to get us back on track now, do you guys find yourselves reading these books like at a certain time of year, or is it like after a certain thing has happened to you, like if you're feeling depressed or if you're feeling excited or something, you're like, I really want to read this book now, or I know this book's going to make me feel better or something like that, or make me feel worse? I don't know. Sometimes there's always room for a book that like causes you to have a good cry, I think. Or maybe that's
AKA
just me.
A journey in a mystery.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's comics. I don't know. Like, there have been a handful of stories where I've just been like, holy crap, I never thought that a comic could really make me tear up. And yet it happened, and I'm very, like, happy that that happened, you know? Like, not just as, like, I'm proud as of comics as a medium, but, like, sometimes you need a good cry. Like, when you watch a good movie, and it makes you, you know, makes you tear up at the end because, you know, the dog was alive the entire time, and now the family's back together. Things like that. I'm not referencing any specific movie, but, like,
Homeward Bound.
Have you guys seen the trailer for that movie, A Dog Story, with Kevin, or what's his name, Dennis Quaid? And it's like, oh my gosh, my heart, stop. It's only been 2 minutes. Anyways, but what I'm trying to ask, do you find yourselves rereading these books during a certain time in like of the year, or like during an emotional feeling or something like that?
I mean, I definitely have some books that will evoke strong emotional responses in me, and sometimes it's very cathartic to just, like, go through them and then, like, put them behind you. You kind of just need that to move forward if you're in a bad spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, I wouldn't say that they're seasonal, but, you know, if I'm feeling kind of like I need to just work out a good cry, I'll reread Journey in a Mystery. Or also another one is the Brubaker Winter Soldier, where like Natasha gets kidnapped by one of the other Winter Soldiers, and then he has to like go rescue her, and the ending of that book just is like devastating.
You know, on that note, I know Brian, you probably have something to say. I just want to talk about this Winter Soldier and Natasha Romanoff thing. Why did that relationship disappear in the movies? I'm so bummed.
Because Joss fucking Whedon is why.
God, that
fight
was
me,
like
Joss.
My favorite.
I will take you down.
Is easily one of my favorite, like, unseen, suddenly became like a romance thing in the comics. Like, I loved that those two, it seems so obvious that they would be
paired
up.
It makes so much
but
sense.
But it works really, really well. Yeah.
Yeah, but okay. You're forgetting that this way we got to shoehorn in a relationship between Natasha and the Hulk, and vaguely imply that women who can't have babies are monsters.
Oh, right.
And then we also got to have the, like, creepy, out of nowhere, and, like, out of character Hawkeye family.
Yeah. Which, I read an article that Joss Whedon really fought for that scene because he wanted to have a scene of the characters not being heroes interacting with each other. To which, that point, I have to credit him, but also it was unnecessary to give Hawkeye family, so I don't know.
It would have been so easy to make her his sister and make them his niece and nephew. Same thing would have happened.
Yeah.
I think we already had the out of costume scene at the beginning of Age of Ultron anyways.
That's true. But I mean, we would have never gotten that scene of Captain America.
I mean, I disavow that entire movie.
That, you know, he's ripped the whole piece of wood in half because he was so angry.
That was a good scene. That was literally the only takeaway from that movie worth keeping.
Yeah.
I'm especially angry, too, about the swearing thing. Like, have you ever met an army guy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I know the army exists.
Anyway.
But back to rereading. Brian.
Back to my beautiful Russian murder OTP.
Brian, do you find yourself rereading these books at like a certain time of year or anything like that?
Not really. It'll usually be like something will happen that will like remind me they exist. And then I'll go through and reread the entire Runaways or something.
Right.
It's because I'll like see them mentioned or when I
they're getting
first
a Hulu show.
What?
Oh yeah, that's a thing that's totally happening.
I was not aware.
Well, you better go reread that now.
This changes the game.
Exactly. This is exactly what I'm talking about right here.
Oh wait, gotcha. Speaking of dinosaurs, yes. Dinosaurs. Dinosaurs. We can make anything about dinosaurs on this show.
What? Oh, yeah. There,
welcome
totally
to the
is
I Love Dinosaurs podcast.
Yeah, this is the episode of Dinosaur Tangents, and I'm not mad about it by any means.
It's great.
Yeah. Okay. So, I don't know. Rereading books is still very weird to me. I don't know. I am still very much of the mindset that like I'm only gonna go back to reread something if I want to be like refresh myself and just I still read things for discovery. I just can't get past that point. Like, all I want to do is read new things to, like, grow my breadth of knowledge to say, like, I've read all of these things, like, which is a very immature mindset in some ways to be that comic nerd who's like, I've read all the things so I can tell you about what's good and what's bad and all that jazz. And I mean, even then, those tastes change over time, but
well, that's
I guess,
another good reason to go back and reread things.
Right, which is
your tastes change, so you might find something that you hated the first time around that now you actually really enjoy.
Right. See, I find myself doing that with music a lot, where there would be bands, like, for instance, My Chemical Romance. Absolutely hated them when I was in high school and all throughout college. I was like, oh, what a bunch of losers. Their hair is weird, and they did that one song that was okay, but everything else is bad. And then I put on like a radio station of like pop punk from that era, and a My Chemical Romance song came on, and I was like, oh my gosh, what have I been doing with my time? I could have been listening to My Chemical Romance the entire time, and then just like blasted through all of their discography that I could find on like Google Music or whatever.
But I think that like when you're younger, your likes and dislikes define so much who you are. There's a lot at stake when you like or dislike something when you're younger. And I think that you kind of mellow out when you get a little bit older and you can like things with less, like, they don't define you as much as a person.
Right. Well, and I think there's also the ability to like something and not be like, so you have to like get obsessed with it. You can just like something. You can just listen to an album. You can just read a comic. You don't have to go in depth about it.
Like all the time I spent not watching cartoons.
Really?
Oh yeah. I mean, from like, you know, from like 6th grade to 10th or 11th grade, I was like, no, cartoons are for little kids. I'm a big kid.
Oh, I
now,
see what you mean.
You know, I was watching Steven Universe before we started this show, and I love it.
That's. I still need to rewatch that show. I need to watch that show, not rewatch. I need to watch all of it.
It'll make you feel stuff. It's great.
That's what I've heard. You know, I don't know what the point of this episode is. I'm really sorry. I hope that anyone out there who's listening is getting enjoyment out of us just saying, yeah, that's really good. And dinosaurs.
And dinosaurs.
Maybe that's the point of it. It's just we just needed to find a reason to bring ourselves to dinosaurs. And now we're here.
I mean, I think that the point of the show was it's almost like, you know, do you, what comics are like so much a part of your worldview that you keep them in a regular rotation of your reading?
Right, right. And I'm kind of like looking at my shelves of comics, and I realized that like when I made my big move to New York, I got rid of a lot of comics that I had that were actually pretty near and dear to my heart, because all of my comics were near and dear to my heart at the time. But when I had to make the final decision, do I need this or do I not need this, the books that I kept are kind of like the weirdos that I told myself I could reread this. I could sit down and go through this entire run of Exiles, which is like this weird alternate X-Men story, which is probably one of the coolest books for that reason. Like, they just go to alternate universes where other things have happened, and it's a big what if. And I told myself,
isn't there a Journey and a Mystery tie-in with Exiles?
Oh, of course. There's a Exiles tie-in to like anything, because there's so many universes that those characters drop into that you can throw them into anything and it works. But they did try to do a resurgence of that storyline a few years back, I think right in the middle of that Journey into Mystery run. And I wouldn't be surprised if they tied into that. Just to say like, hey, look, remember this book? And no one did, except for me.
I feel like maybe a better title for this topic would have been like, what books would you save in a fire if you could only grab a handful?
Oh, don't do that to me. That hurts.
I know.
Because now I'm thinking, I'm like, I got four long boxes and like a shelf of trades and stuff like that. I don't know what I would do. Like,
the cats have legs. They could fit for themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are your cats going to like fit out the windows anymore?
Yeah, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.
Twix, I know Twix is getting all chubbed.
Hey, you know what? These cats are indoor cats, and they have only one room to live in, so...
I love your chubby cats, Mike.
I do, too.
All chubby cats.
All cats are good cats.
Yes.
Yeah. Except mine.
Except that they're assholes, but...
Most of the time, they're assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, huge dick, but I love them so much.
Yeah.
Just like how Mike and I met.
I'm going to take that... that clip and just use it out of context from now on.
Oh boy.
Oh man. You know, I used to reread the Harry Potter books a lot. I think I've reread that series probably 8 or 9 times. And man, it's all a build up to me just to get to Order of the Phoenix. And then after
best
that it's like
the worst movie.
Whatever. Really? Because I've heard a lot of people say that they love Azkaban, but they hated the movie. Or Prisoner of Azkaban, but they hated the Prisoner of Azkaban movie.
Well, that's the point where it really like diverged so totally from the books that it couldn't get brought back on track. But I think that the movie itself is pretty good if you're not looking for the exact like adaptation of the book. Order of the Phoenix is annoying because they skip a lot of really important thematic stuff to do this like dumb love story side thing that like just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. See, I don't think I could rewatch those movies.
I remember being 15. A lot of that was dumb love story side stuff that didn't make any sense.
That's true.
And also, didn't they like recast Lavender Brown for that movie and she was supposed to be black and then all of a sudden she was white? That was really annoying.
Yeah, Harry Potter cinematic universe kind of just does like some weird stuff whenever they want. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it.
You know what they should add? They should add dinosaurs.
That was one topic they did not cover in the Harry Potter story mythos.
I guess there were dragons.
I mean, yeah.
I'm fine. It's fine. I'm sure that J.K. Rowling will release some statement over Twitter talking about how there were dinosaurs at Hogwarts the whole time.
Yeah, the stairs were actually dinosaurs.
That's how she keeps the public eye.
Yeah, yeah. I guess like the final sum up here would be, you know, if you had to pick something, you know, right now that you were going to reread, or if you're working on, if there is something you're currently rereading, what is it and why are you rereading it?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, I'm actually going through Civil War again for a couple of reasons. I've read the main Civil War story probably back when we lived in the trailer out by Grand Valley.
Way back when.
But I'm rereading it now just because I'm a much more aware individual now than I was then. So I feel like I'll actually be able to think about it and form a better opinion about what's happening in those books than I did the first time. But I'm also taking advantage of the unlimited subscription thing to read all those side books that I didn't read the first time because, you know, I had no way to track them down, and even if I did, I wasn't going to spend the money on them.
Right. So. That, and I have to say, that's a really cool feature, especially because that's like a 90-book series or 90-some book series to read through that whole thing. But to get that full story, like, that's incredible. Like, that's easily worth the $9.99 a month or whatever it is. That's awesome.
$10 a month. Because there's stuff like that I wouldn't have even thought about. Like, there's a couple issues of Fantastic Four, like right at the beginning of it, that I never would have even considered to look for.
Cool. I think that having access to digital comics is making it easier to dig into backlist books and give them another look. Like, Brian, you had mentioned earlier that you might find a book that you like now that you didn't like before. I'm kind of discovering that with recently there was a big Fantastic Four sale on Comixology, and I don't typically like older comics just because I don't connect with the artwork all that much, which is a really big sticking point for me. But same. Like especially like the first appearances of like Silver Surfer and Galactus, seeing the art in like digital HD is such a different experience from some of the like crappier versions that had been around before, and you're just like, oh my god, I it really is like a whole new way to look at it, and made me more interested in picking them up. So I think that it would be, I don't know how you guys keep track of comics that you read or if you even do, but I don't.
In my brain.
Yeah,
in
your brain.
I've got a spreadsheet.
Do you use your spreadsheet to like rate books, whether you liked them or didn't like them?
No. I got no idea. I just know I read them.
I mean, I wish I kept better track because I feel like maybe it would be interesting to go back and reread books that I looked at and didn't like for whatever reason to see how that had changed, if it had changed. I was looking at my old Marvel collection on the Marvel app on my iPad, and there's definitely some books in there that I was like, oh yeah, I just forgot that book existed. I don't know why. I should reread it and see if I want to like finish it out.
Interesting.
I've seen a lot of people use Goodreads for that.
Yeah. I know that Kate does that religiously.
Issues.
And then you can write reviews for them, and then you can leave notes for yourself to say, remember when you hated this, Mike? Yeah. But Tia, are you rereading anything right now, or are you planning to reread anything?
You know, I recently picked up my my Marvel 1602. That's the one that I really like to reread a lot, just because it's really fun to like be smug when you know like what the character analogs are.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I remember I read that book right when I was getting into Marvel. Like, all I knew was X-Men, didn't really know anything about anyone else. So I didn't know who Matt Murdock was for the whole book. And then at the end, and then eventually, someone was like, that's Daredevil. And I was like, you're fucking kidding me.
It blows your mind.
Yeah.
You're a Daredevil.
Maybe. Yeah. Ooh, maybe I'll go and reread that. Oh, my goodness.
Because then you could, because I mean, I really love Angela 1602, the Witch Hunter one that Marguerite Bennett and Stephanie Hans and some other people whose names I can't remember. I'm sorry. I love you. You're precious angels. That was recently, was it last summer?
Not sure.
I don't know. There's a beautiful 1602 Bucky where he's got a pentagram instead of a star on his arm because he's into occult stuff, and he doesn't last very long, but he's charming for his page.
Oh, that's how a lot of those characters ended up in 1602, though. They're just hey, well, remember this guy? And now they're dead, you know?
Yeah. Isn't that most of comics, though? Let's be honest.
I mean, to an extent.
Isn't that most of life, really?
Oh, God.
Brian.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Wow. All right. Well, I'm going to reread 1602 and not cry. I guess.
I'm going to work on my nihilism somewhere else.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast. Our host and producer is Mike Rappin, and the show is edited by Xander Riggs. Special thanks this week to Tia Vasiliu and Brian Murray. The music in this episode is brought to you by Flamingosis and Infinity Shred. You can find more of Flamingosis on Bandcamp at flamingosis1.bandcamp.com. And you can find more of Infinity Shred at infinityshred.com. If you enjoy this show, tell someone about it, rate us online, or write to us. Tell us about your favorite series to reread by email at ircb@destroythesaib.org. You can find the entire podcast team on Twitter, and you can follow the show at ircbpodcast. Don't forget, you can still comment on the show and ask us questions about each episode on our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Until next time, from all of us here at the podcast, thank you for listening.
Oh boy. So,
speaking of off the rails.
Yeah. Totally 100% off the rails. I don't know. So, how was everybody's week? What are you guys doing this week? At this point, I don't know what else to do here.
We're not going to talk about dinosaurs some more?
We could. I mean,
they're all dead.
Oh.
Yeah.
We'll never see a living dinosaur.
I mean, we might. Jurassic Park could happen. You never know.
I don't want it to happen.
The half-life of DNA is too short. It would be impossible to get a usable DNA sample.
There's some science magic that happened in Jurassic Park.
We can reverse engineer dinosaurs. Some scientists made like a dinosaur chicken that was, they just like meddled with the genetic code, made it express all its old dinosaur genes.
Have I told you guys about how I was like traumatized about, and I was like scared to take out library books for like most of my life because a paleontologist stole my library book when I was in like third grade. I was doing a science fair project about
a magical fairy tale, like a paleontologist stole my library book. And since that day, I've sworn I will kill every paleontologist I see until I find my library book.
Funny, I actually wanted to be a paleontologist when I was a kid, just so I could steal library books.
I was doing a science fair project, and it was, are dinosaurs more closely related to modern day birds or reptiles? And I had built all these model skeletons and everything. And my mom's friend was a paleontologist, and I was telling him about my project, and he was like, oh, this sounds really neat. And, oh, can I borrow that book that you're reading for it? And so my mom let him borrow it, and he never gave it back. And the library sent us all of these threatening letters about how I owed them 70 cents or whatever. And it terrified me, and I thought that I was going to like go to library jail. So I like didn't check. For years, I was afraid to check out library books.
Oh my goodness.
Great.
That's my dinosaur story.
Oh my goodness.
Man.
And I'm happy to say that I concluded that they are closely related to modern day birds, and that's what science thinks now, so clearly I was ahead of my time.
Absolutely. I believe it.
Out of the curve.